Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome back to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Ben Pfeiffer, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Max Carlin. Max, how's it going?
Doing all right, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. And once again, we are joined by Petey Webb for part two of our discussion on the Minnesota Timberwolves. So, Petey, how's it going?
It's going well. Thank you guys for having me.
As sports keep coming back, so does your chance to bet on them with our exclusive wagering partner, BetOnline.ag. Major League Baseball will soon be in full swing, and there are no shortage of ways to get in on the action. BetOnline has all the odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. Also, tune in as Floyd Money Mayweather joins the BetOnline team in a new segment called The Ice is Right, where he talks about his expansive jewelry collection. He'll give you the chance to win some great prizes and bet on the cost of his bling. Visit BetOnline.ag to check out all the odds and up-to-date sports news. Don't forget to sign up and take advantage of all the welcome back sports bonuses. Bet online, your online wagering experts.
Anytime. So last time on Monday for y'all, we talked about the Timberwolves, kind of their current situation, outlined their core optimal fits, you know, what we see for them in the future. And today we are going to talk about what they can do with their number one draft pick in order to, you know, maximize that core and continue progressing. So I think we're just going to discuss some of the guys that we think they should take into that number one spot.
Yeah, so I think the thing that has to be said first is if they can trade back, they should trade back.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not going to waste time on that. We don't have any insight on potential trades they could make. I don't even think it's necessarily that realistic that they're actually going to do it, but they should. They would be able to get a player who fits far better and would, like, it would be really, really stunning if they didn't get positive value in any trade back. They almost by default would. With that said, let's get into the realistic options for them to select at number one first. And I think that the guy who is either the favorite or co-favorite to be the number one overall pick is Anthony Edwards. PD, how about you give us your take on Anthony Edwards to Minnesota number one?
So yeah, Anthony Edwards is a big either primary or combo primary, depending on how you see it. Hyper explosive, capable of looking like an all-star, and then a guy who's uninterested on back-to-back possessions. The game comes extraordinarily easy to him, both in terms of moves, in terms of feel. And a guy whose numbers and impact aren't necessarily the same. There are games where you don't necessarily notice him, and then he turns it on for 5 minutes and is easily the best player you'll see all year. And then there are stretches where, you know, getting 15 points in a row or 15 points a game from him is progress, because he is a player who is peaks and valleys and almost never that middle point of just consistent production.
I have kind of mixed feelings on Ant to Minnesota, because on the one hand, I think that the idea of Towns that we discussed as a hub, as a guy who is involved in these off-ball actions as well, I think that's a great fit for the optimal role of Anthony Edwards, that he is a guy who we've talked up his cutting a lot. We think that he could be a really, really impressive cutter, just in general, a really impressive off-ball scorer. It's a skill set that he has, these powerful and sharp cuts, that he has off-the-catch shooting. Like, that he can attack off curls, that he can attack in these scenarios. It's just a matter of sort of getting him to be more decisive in these scenarios. But he has this skill set in place already, and I think that's kind of where he's at his best, because it mitigates some of his shot selection issues, his decision making issues, some of his tendency issues with actually taking the initiative to get downhill as opposed to settling for impressive but not necessarily high efficiency step backs and whatnot. However, defensively, I think is where the whole thing kind of breaks down, especially when you consider the timeline that Minnesota's on, where Towns has, what, is it 3 or 4 years left after this under contract?
I believe it's 3.
Yeah, so basically they have to turn this around quickly, very, very, very quickly, because if they don't, we're not far off, I would think, from Towns trying to force his way out. And defensively, I think it's going to be a long time until Ant Edwards is anything but horrendous. I think that at the point of attack, while he looks physically impressive, he has never gotten through a screen in his entire life. I think some of his isolation sequences are really impressive, where he has the lateral movement and size and strength to really, really just embarrass guys. But you don't see it very often. Like, you see him just blown by in those situations because he doesn't try. And then off the ball, which is where I think he would probably find himself if he's sharing a backcourt with D'Lo, but I could be wrong about that. He's catastrophic. Like, he makes the most unbelievable gambles you will ever see. He loses guys as badly as anyone. Like, he gets back cut all the time, face cut all the time. He's just a disaster right now, and I think it's going to be a while until he's not on that end. And I think once he is, he could be that versatile point of attack guy who is a nice complement to D'Lo, but it's just, you're not working with a timeline that's that long. And that's really concerning to me.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about Towns and Russell being a vulnerable pick and roll duo. I mean, that doesn't even come close to the team defense trio. That would be Towns, Russell, and Anthony Edwards. I mean, again, I mean, I'd probably be skeptical of Edwards' team defense really ever getting to like positive level, but it certainly isn't going to happen in 3 or 4 years, I don't think. And that's just, I just don't think there's any tenable way you can really build a survivable defense around Russell, Towns, and Edwards. We talked about, building around Towns is plausible last time. Building around Russell and Towns is very tough, but like, I think it's possible with 3 perfect pieces next to him. But with Towns, Russell, and Edwards, it's just difficult for me to see how that defense really, really finds any way to be anything less than atrocious. I mean, that's obviously just a real obstacle. Long term, that's less of an issue. But for right now, that is the option that would be really troubling. I mean, offensively, as Max was kind of talking about, I don't hate the fit at all. We've talked about, I think Ant, it's been lauded, talks about recently how, Ant, for better or worse, has really, been kind of the guy on all of his teams. And whether or not that's worked is important, but he's never really played with anybody close to the level of Towns, not even just his goodness in general, but relative to competition level. He's never had, a star like Towns to play off of pretty much consistently. So I think that I'd be fascinated to see how Edwards' wiring and that can change and evolve playing in a situation where he has an offensive megastar and another, like, all things considered, pretty solid offensive player next to him. Where, maybe he can be more focused as a cutter and, more focused as when he does catch, being more decisive, being more relentless, attacking the rim instead of settling. Because I think, the wiring is really just the thing with Anthony Edwards, that if you can't fix that, then he's probably never going to be a really successful NBA player. But I think getting him in a situation where he just can't do as much is probably the beneficial for the development of that, where if he can really be in a restricted and specialized role early next to two other really good players, that's kind of ideal for him and kind of a unique situation among a lot of number one picks. A lot of them are, you know, asked to run offense heavily, be thrown in the fire. And I think a lot of other teams, you know, if they landed number one and took Edwards, that would kind of be the situation he falls into. But, you know, this while I have my concerns, I do think there's room for this to work in like the medium short term. I mean, I think short term it's going to struggle. But
so, PD, do you think that as far as like a rewiring of Ant's approach goes, that Minnesota is a spot to do that, where they could put him in a role where he's playing off Towns, playing to an extent off of D'Lo, and it can just be like, you know, you are forced to make quick decisions. Like, you are going to either shoot off the catch or you're going to attack. You're going to attack off this Towns off-ball screen. Like, do you think that this is a spot conducive to that?
So I think that in a lot of ways, it's actually one of the better locations for Ant. And also in other ways, I think it's one of the worst. One of the ways that it's better is that Ant's never had to coexist before, really. Not on Express, not at Holy Spirit, certainly not at Georgia. And I think that for a lot of players, like, we emphasize reps and freedom when they need to explore what they can do. The problem is that, like, Ant's been able to do anything he wanted to since he was like 16 years old. And so for him, it's more of a refining process, because he's so ridiculously talented. The ways that I think it's the worst is that, like, the Timberwolves are going to have three very difficult, energy intensive restructurings that need to happen at once. The first is teaching Towns how to, or getting Towns to be, you know, multiple at the spot of pick and roll and just be a better communicator. To orchestrate, you know, a defense that's playoff worthy. You have getting D'Lo to be efficient, which requires a great deal of scheming. And you also have, like, getting Edwards to simplify his game so that he can expand it later, which is to say, like, you have this, you know, 11 feet of space. You can't go wider. You can't, you know, no matter what, like, you have to stay within this band or you're going to break up spacing. And I don't particularly trust the Saunders regime to do that, because that's an extremely difficult job. I think that we're really everyone in general is really hard on Ant's defense because, like, a 25 percentile talent outcome for him is a very good defender. If he were 25% of his, like, just general abilities, like, that's a good NBA defender. And for him to be, like, a bad college defender speaks to a lot. And it's the ways in which he's bad that's frustrating, where he just tries to do superhero stuff. There'll be a good guard and he'll just reach late trying to get, like, a perfect rip to get a pick six. And, like, if he had timed the rip earlier, it wouldn't have been as devastating, but he wanted to get, like, the one at the very bottom of the cross for, like, pure cookies. And there's just so many of these, little things of just sort of freeform exploration and being in a world where, like, Towns has to get a certain, you know, amount of touches and you have to get this stuff to make the playoffs. Like, that impetus has never been there because, you know, every context for Ant has catered to Ant's development in a specific way, which isn't necessarily a fault of his. It's just that that's what it's been. In the same way that, like, for Melo, that's what his contexts have been. It's going to be interesting to see how he responds. And, like, Ant seems to be a wonderful kid who enjoys learning. But just having the ceiling on what you can do creatively be like, oh, you have a top 10 player in the league. Like, they need the ball. You're going to come off the screen. And Georgia in some ways prepared for him for that. I think 38% of his at the rim finishes were unassisted because, you know, Green had him run off so many curls and, Iverson cuts that if someone hugged close, it's just, he's in a way been prepared for this role. And I think that it can be a really good fit. I would just like to see whether it's if Vanderpool gets, you know, the Houston job, like, they need to pay extremely large money to get Alvin Gentry there. Getting somebody who's going to really, like, scheme every single possession to a degree that none of these three guys have really had before. And just making sure that there's a specificity about their weaknesses and a specificity about the growth plan that I'm concerned about, not because
it's impossible, but just because that doesn't seem to be the track record of this particular team.
Yeah, it's frustrating because for all the reasons you listed, I do like it in a scenario where they have all the time in the world, but the situation, the reality of the situation is that they're really, really on a clock. And I just don't think that it's going to have enough time to mature this like three-headed core if the pick is Ant, that I don't think we'll ever see that potential realized. And that's upsetting, but I kind of think that's the reality of it. I don't know if you guys feel differently about that, but that's kind of why I would shy away from Ant at one for them, because even though it, conceptually some of it makes a lot of sense, I don't think you have the time for that to be manifested.
Yeah.
Should we move on to I would say the other realistic option, which is LaMelo Ball.
Sure.
Yeah, Ben, you can get us started with it.
Yeah, I'll say LaMelo presents some of the same issues as Anthony Edwards in terms of short-term flexibility. And defensively, while his problems for Ant from Ant are very different, he's going to have a lot of problems defensively. Where what LaMelo has on him in intelligence and just being kind of a genius, he lacks in severely in frame and physicality, which is going to hinder him early, especially on the ball. I think the off-ball stuff will come with him, just given how smart he is. I trust that. But on the ball at the point of attack, with having that backcourt with D'Angelo Russell, trying to guard pick and rolls and stuff is going to be really, really brutal. But then offensively, and offensively again, I mean, LaMelo really hasn't ever been in a position where he's been asked to do a ton off ball, at least not recently. Maybe going back to when he was like a 14-year-old playing with Lonzo and LiAngelo, he did some of that, but that's well in his past at this point. I do think that's probably not an optimal environment for LaMelo, given that I think the best world for him is one where he can run a bunch of high pick and rolls and just try stuff. Though I think LaMelo is the best prospect on the board, and I think out of the realistic options, he'd be my pick for them just because of how I think he's kind of better than everyone else. And I think he kind of fits, it's fortunate that they're attached, for this situation, attached to Russell as they are, because I think a LaMelo Towns kind of pairing is really, could be really, really nice with just LaMelo's passing, adding on, being additive to Towns' skill, and Towns opening up spots for LaMelo where he's the physical deficiencies aren't going to be as significant, with Towns giving advantages, but with Russell in the fold, that's problematic because one of them's going to have to work a lot off ball, and having LaMelo play a lot off ball is just minimizing what he's good at. I think I prefer him to Edwards just because I think he's a better prospect, but it's out of those are the two realistic options, and neither of them are that great, I think, in the short term, or in the timeline that Minnesota's on. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at.
I think one of the appealing things with LaMelo is that there are kind of no illusions about what he is defensively. He's not going to be asked to be the point of attack guy because that would be really bad. So he will get a chance to sort of be that disruptor off the ball. I just don't know if in the short term he's going to consistently be that enough.
I think in the long term he definitely can, but
short-term. And I do think he's still more playmaker than he is consistent making small rotations, small positioning choices, small stunts and whatnot that matter on a possession by possession basis. I think he's still at this stage much more playmaker and takes a lot of risks to accomplish that. But it's just I like a median level outcome for LaMelo where he is a linking type guy, but that's not what you're shooting for at number one, I don't think. And I just think fundamentally for LaMelo to be worth it, he's got to be a high volume pick and roll player. And we just spent an hour talking about how that's not how a Towns team should be built.
I think
I think one of the difficulties with LaMelo's fit is that there's a lot of redundancy in the flaws of D'Angelo Russell on defense, and he's skinny. I think that in a lot of ways it can help to have a variety of different flaws for defenders. There's not a single way that a team can attack you. But like LaMelo has technique issues. He has physique issues. In the way that like Anthony Edwards is immediately going to be able to throw, like you can throw him on big wings at point of attack. Like it's physically possible and he's going to be able to hang because like he's built like a strong safety. If a strong safety were 6'6". So he may lack some of the like smaller technique stuff, but like it's not going to be he looks out of place. Where like LaMelo in the short term, like it could get really messy, especially with like on ball defense. I think that
in a lot of ways, it's not something that anybody would even try. Like,
yeah, I mean, I just think that there are a lot of ways I could see Anthony Edwards as a shorter term plan than LaMelo.
Yeah, yeah,
because there are, especially on defense. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that like there's not that much low hanging fruit in terms of shot selection for the Minnesota Timberwolves. If you look at their shot chart, they take a really modern approach, which is like, you know, threes and layups with like, they take, you know, about league average amount of corner threes. I think it's like 0.2 or 0.3 away in terms of total distribution. They're just bad at them. Like they did not have a green area on their NBA shot chart. And LaMelo isn't going to help that near one. And like, of course, all this analysis doesn't matter. If Carl Anthony Towns says, this is the guy I want, that's the guy who's getting picked. But like, if you need to make the playoffs to keep him happy, and LaMelo may very well not be an impact player or even like a player who contributes to a playoff team this year, like you kind of can't pick him.
Yeah.
And I said this as like a full, you know, person who enjoys the works of LaMelo Ball, but like the political machinations behind this particular pick and what this year means for Minnesota can't be overstated.
Yeah, I mean, when you draft LaMelo, there has to be an expectation that he's going to make mistakes, and there has to be a willingness to let him work through mistakes that I just don't think Minnesota can really afford, given their current timeline. I mean, it's just an unfortunate situation that they find themselves in, because if they, you know, had the ability, the confidence, they could cultivate Towns and LaMelo as a long-term pairing. I like that a lot, but that's just not something they can realistically do, it seems like. I mean, that's what we've been talking about this whole time. Yeah, I mean, they're just in a really difficult spot at number one this year. I mean,
and it's not just a case of like LaMelo won't be optimized. It's that, like, without a doubt, two out of the three of these guys won't be optimized. And I don't know what the plan would be if you draft LaMelo. Like, is this a town-centric offense? Is this the town-centric offense that it should be? Or is it like a D'Lo pick and roll centric offense? Or is it a LaMelo pick and roll centric offense? Is it like a Houston LaMelo and D'Angelo Russell are taking turns and Towns is a, you know, just shoot pick and pop threes and that's kind of it? Like I don't know what the plan would be. Like I mean, PD, how would you even go about like planning for a LaMelo pick on this team? And your answer cannot be trade D'Angelo Russell.
I mean, I think like at that point you need to start calling up like some really famous defensive minds and trying to see what they could possibly give you, because like that's the solution that I would have. Like you kind of at that point just have to ride the roller coaster. I think drafting LaMelo automatically means you're an up-paced team, and you're an up-paced team who is going to give up a lot of physicality. So like that's just the nature of how that rookie year is going to go. You're going to have to live with, you know, with wild fluctuating shooting. You're going to have to live with mistakes, and like, to me, picking LaMelo makes sense in the like go with the guy who you think is the highest ceiling sense, but it doesn't make sense on the day-to-day, like, what do you do in those film meetings kind of sense. Like,
it all seems good until you have to like actually be the person who diagrams like where the help side is supposed to be. And like you're talking to like your three, you know, good, your three best help defenders are for guards are Melo, D'Lo, and Malik Beasley. Like that's a situation I wouldn't really wish on a lot of coaches that I may not like. And I think that that's one of the reasons they'll go away from it because this year is too critical. And I mean, of course they should trade down, like get another asset, try to pack, you know, get a stronger seventh man and try to get to the 4, 5, 6, 7 and then take a wing who will help, but won't swing things. Like that's the difficulty of taking, these sort of, unique pieces is that you have to then have unique team building, and unique team building is generally a thing that should only be accomplished by, or should only should be attempted by accomplished front offices. Because if you screw up once, like it's all over. If they screw up this pick, they've bet the house on like a guy who is like a sort of an all-star and whatever Melo turns out, and they might just flush Cat down the toilet.
Yeah. I mean, they're not in a position where they can build around this pick. Like this pick where I think that what 90 something percent of number one overall picks are guys who are intended to be built around. This pick very much cannot be that. Like, this is a guy who has to fit in around what they have in place. And I think that's pretty unusual for a team picking number one overall, because teams picking number one overall typically do not have a player as good, as worth prioritizing, and as requiring of particular fits around him as Karl Anthony Towns. And then they've also put themselves in the position where they're committed to D'Lo, which makes it, you know, sort of everything more extreme. If neither of you have anything left to say on LaMelo, I think there are two more guys that could conceivably factor in at number one before we discuss some less likely guys. Do you guys have anything on LaMelo?
Nope.
So I think there are two guys that they could consider. And the first one is one that I most certainly would not consider just because I don't think that he generates that much impact, but I think it's realistic and I do think he's actually a really good fit. And that's Denny Avdija. So
yeah.
What do you guys make of the Denny fit? If that's the direction that they go at one,
I think it's pretty ideal. Even if like, I'm with you on, you know, I wouldn't do it just because I think that like I think you at number one, like even for a team as fit needy as the Wolves, like you have to take into account just general value. I don't think Denny is worthy of that, but like I mean, it works really well. You know, defensively, we talked about a guy who, you know, we need insulators for Towns and Russell. Denny, you know, theoretically has some of that weak side rim protection to be an insulator, you know, stunting, you know, at the nail, like we talked about. He's got a lot of the team defense stuff to make that work, you know, to be kind of like a four next to Towns. And, you know, whether or not the shooting woes can be kind of mitigated a little bit by, you know, Towns being an all-time shooter. And then, you know, offensively, I think it's a very good fit as well. I mean, talked about Wancho last time as being a relentless cutter. Denny's going to be an even better cutter. I mean, he's an unbelievably good cutter with just time and sense of space and fitting into holes, you know, and he's going to be an awesome transition player, a guy who Towns can pass to, a guy who can pass to Towns, you know, secondary pick and rolls, maybe mismatches in the post. A lot of things I think you can do with Denny's passing that are not, you know, running pick and rolls or having him create, which is, you know, the thing that he can't do. And, you know, the reason why I don't think he's worth a pick this high. But, you know, I think in terms of like a complimentary forward, like he's kind of what you want next to Towns and Russell at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of perfect. And that's definitely what we were getting at with the Wancho thing, that like he's kind of the template, but Denny is just way better than him.
If they were picking it like five, even like I could see it, but like
exactly just, like
not like like even if that would be high for me, like I wouldn't bat an eye at that. But like it's just one, I just don't think you can justify it.
Yeah, I just don't think that he generates that level of impact. But if you're talking about a guy who is like really a notably good cutter, who can play off of these advantage situations,
who does get downhill, who can play make in those situations, and then who brings a lot of value as a team defender. That sounds a lot like what they need. I think that one of the problems with the team defense is that I think Denny is more of a interior guy, like a weak side rim protector. And I think they need a guy who's operating more in different areas of the floor. Like Ben said, like on the nail, that sort of thing. I don't think that's necessarily Denny's strongest
and I think capability. They still need someone, you know, to actively cover for Towns as well. I mean, I think that's
sure. Yeah. No, yeah. That's definitely true. But yeah, I think that the fit makes a lot of sense. It's just, it feels like such a punt to do that at number one. There's no chance he returns impact befitting a number one, even in an optimized role. Like I just think that there's no way, and that there are just without a doubt going to be better options, who we'll get into later. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that he's one of the better fits from Minnesota's team building. I don't think it's one of the better fits from, you know, Minnesota's franchise building. It makes a lot of sense on the floor. You know, the weak side rim protection, just like defensive competence. If you're running a horizontal offense with a whole bunch of reads, like he's going to help. I've always been a believer that he's going to shoot. Spencer has that 59 for 156 number from three outside of the final 6 seconds, and then 41 for 107 on all catch and shoots that aren't in the last 6 seconds of the shot clock. I've just never doubted that he's going to shoot, and this eliminates Denny's like actual biggest problem, which is advantage creation. Just like Towns in this theory, like if you're running this motion heavy offense, like all of the Towns' gravity and his creation ability will subsidize Denny's. On the downside, you want to add more new types of free throw concerns to this team.
Yeah.
I think this is fine. Like it makes sense. It's like the least visionary thing you could do with this pick.
It's like on the borderline of like being fine at this point.
I honestly don't think so. I think that it's such a punt at this point. Like it's just, there's no way that you get enough out of that pick from an impact standpoint for it to be at all worth it. And I think that there are such better options.
I mean, I get why they do it, but
yeah. So what I think is that if they trade back and they end up picking in like the 5 to 8 range, that it's totally fine and would make a lot of sense. But it's just at number one, he's just not going to impact the game at that level. He's just not going to.
How do you pay him when his extension comes up? Do you pay him a number one pick? And that's the, like, the reason why I could see this happening is because, like, that would just be a hilarious public negotiation to be like, you picked him number one. And they're like, yeah, it'd be our fourth option. Like, he's going to, you know, have the fourth or fifth most shots on this team. And, you know, he's going to be a helpful piece. Like, I've been pretty obviously low on Denny because of how, you know, specific his fit needs to be. But this maximizes two out of your three players. This would help D'Lo, like, most of D'Lo's problems. It would help most of Towns' problems. And, like, it doesn't really matter like how much you maximize Denny, it just minimizes the things he's bad at. So like if you're grading this as like plus, plus, minus, this is plus, plus neutral. Like I think that there is two like more fun picks that could be made, which we'll eventually get to. But like this makes enough sense if you're like, no, Towns is good enough. If you think Towns is like probably like one of the three best players in the league, this makes a degree of sense. Like I'm going to laugh at you when the extension comes out. But if you truly believe Towns is like that good, then sure, I can understand that particular vision of the world.
As sports keep coming back, so does your chance to bet on them with our exclusive wagering partner, betonline.ag. Major League Baseball will soon be in full swing, and there are no shortage of ways to get in on the action. BetOnline has all the odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. Also, tune in as Floyd Money Mayweather joins the BetOnline team in a new segment called The Ice is Right, where he talks about his expansive jewelry collection. He'll give you the chance to win some great prizes and bet on the cost of his bling. Visit betonline.ag to check out all the odds and up-to-date sports news. Don't forget to sign up and take advantage of all the welcome back sports bonuses. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. 2020 has been the year of things happening that are completely out of your control. But there is one thing you can control, and that's shaving your bush. Our sponsors at Manscaped are here to remind you to do so. The Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0 is a premium electric trimmer that's designed to give you a confidence boost through body image. Their ceramic blade and skin-safe technology are designed to reduce nicks or tugs on your fellas down low. The Lawnmower 3.0 is also waterproof and comes with an LED light so you can manscape in the shower, in the dark, or in a dark shower, whatever floats your boat. They also just released their Shears 2.0 nail kit, which is the perfect add-on to their Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. In fact, listeners of this show will get 20% off plus free shipping with the code armchair at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code armchair. It's time to grab 2020 by the horns by shaving that front trunk.
Yeah, and so then the other guy that I think could conceivably factor in at number one somewhat realistically, and I think has a far stronger case than Denny, is Isaac Okoro. I think that he would play off of Towns incredibly well, that he's another guy who's a very, very valuable and intelligent cutter, that he's someone when he's getting downhill off this movement would be really, really potent as a finisher and as a passer.
There's your foul drawer too.
Yeah, there's your foul drawer. Maybe not your free throw maker, but your foul drawer. And then I think defensively he is pretty close to optimal because he can both do the point of attack stuff where necessary and brings a ton of value as an off-ball guy, as a team guy. So I think that he is kind of, I mean, he's not, you don't, this defense is not one piece away, but he is, I think, a game changer for their defense, honestly, in that kind of no matter what they're going up against, he can slide into different responsibilities and add an immense amount of value. And then offensively, I think that your optimized offense that gets the most out of your transcendent offensive player is one that Isaac Okoro fits in extraordinarily well.
Yeah, I like it a lot because this conception of an ideal Minnesota offense that we've been talking about fits in really well with the maximization of Isaac Okoro that we've talked about on this podcast before, as you kind of need an offense to commit to utilizing him in a way that kind of mitigates his lack of spot up shooting. In a way that, you know, allows him to get heads of steam and have advantages created for him and have other guys use their gravity to get him moving towards the rim. And in this scenario that we're talking about, Minnesota's kind of perfect there. And especially if they were to take him at number one, I mean, that would probably speak to their willingness to invest in him, in his success offensively in that way, and that they're going to involve him in more ways than just being a spot up shooter. So That I mean, offensively, if he can fit there, yeah. I mean, like I quickly quipped, like there's your foul drawer. Like he's gonna be a free throw rate tank. That kind of they don't have like the strength mismatch punishing wing, which he could be in time. I think that's an important piece that they're missing, that they really lack offensively.
How about inverting things offensively, where Okoro is like the screener and Towns is your ball handler?
Oh my god, that's beautiful. I mean, like teach Towns how to throw those lobs, and like that's a beautiful pairing right there for sure. I mean, just defensively, it's so good too. I mean, like you said, I mean, maybe not as team focused. I mean, Okoro is a really good team defender. I mean, maybe not like adds more POA than team, at least in the short term, I think, for them. But certainly adds on the team.
But
side.
I think in a way that would really help to mitigate the Towns issues, that like Isaac Okoro, just like his
screens,
his motto is screens do not exist. That is how he plays. They don't exist to him. And that can be when he's defending Kyra Lewis, or it could be when he's defending, maybe not the biggest of wings in the league, but like most of the creators in the league, like screens just don't exist to this guy. And that would be huge for protecting Towns in pick and roll.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from like Towns, it would be a full-time five, which is going to be a concern. To me, this is the bet on the other players that they've drafted, picking Okoro, because like you can, if you believe that Culver is still like a dribble pass shoot wing, that this was just a learning year as he gets away from the Texas Tech scheme and also like learns how to shoot in a different way, you can throw out some really wicked defensive lineups if you have a three wing grouping of Okogie, Okoro, and Culver. Like that is a group that you can build around, like, and you can use that opportunity to just like hand D'Angelo Russell shots or Malik Beasley shots. I think that it is more interesting to me than Denny, even though Denny like handles is going to do a lot more shooting, just because this team really lacks the ability to finish at the rim. And it also is going to allow some obviously more point Naz Reid stuff with, like, yeah, Kat is the ball handler is interesting, but if you thought about Kat, Naz Reid is the ball handler, now we're really talking. I think that they're like, they have enough really interesting offensive pieces that having a connector who is a legitimately great defender makes a great deal of sense. Like, another really fun extension if they actually did this. Of course, what we're really trying to say is like, please trade down and take a pick that makes sense, which would be like, grow it, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But like, this is the sort of team building that would maximize like D'Angelo defensively and to a certain extent, like his lineup flexibility. It would allow Towns to probably make more mistakes just because like a crow is going to communicate through literally everything. It's going to offer, you know, the shot blocking help, and it reduces Culver's expectation on wings. So like there are going to be like more slender wings Culver can handle and try to dig into their handle, and the bigger wings, you know, even if Okoro isn't enough to really like stop them, you have another wing to help. And like, that's where Culver being a guard defender will help because he's in the passing lane. So like it holds the theory of the secondary players that you've drafted a lot more to me than Denny, which is more about just how good is Karl Anthony Towns. Again, you still have to run a pretty inventive offense to maximize Okoro. But like, if Kat like has another shooting little bump, people are going to start blitzing him no matter what. Like, every pick and pop is a blitz now. And then we're into Isaac Okoro 4-on-3, hell on wheels territory. And like, and this is also a way to generate the corner threes that they need. But maybe like, if D'Angelo Russell or Malik is shooting that versus the players they had last year, like maybe that percentage goes from, you know, a red area, which both corners were, to like solid. And that alone, like just getting more value out of corner threes, may be enough to lift them into a different spot.
Yeah, and they also have 16? Is that their second pick from that college trade? 17. So yeah, I mean, look, 17, you get one more shooter. We'll say that they come away with like Des Bane at 17 or yeah, at 17. And so you've got Towns handling and pick and roll with Okoro as the screener. They're blitzing Towns to get the ball out of his hands. You've got Okoro in a 4-on-3, and the shooters around him are D'Lo, Malik Beasley, and Desmond Bane. And boom, there, profit playoffs. Towns is staying in Minnesota. Everything's saved.
So you're going to have to take Maxi at 17, probably.
But yeah, Maxi would be really good there. Before they jumped, I wanted them to do what was it, like Maxi with the first pick and like Pat Will or some of the other guys we're going to talk about with the second pick. That would have been pretty awesome, addressing everything. But then they jumped up to number one and things got more complicated. Should we move on to the guys who I would say there's no chance that they take at number one, but sure. I guess we think maybe they should consider.
Sure. The first one, talk about Devin Vassell.
Yeah, I'll leave Vassell because I think this is like the thing that I would do if I had to stay at number one is pick Vassell. Because he makes the most sense to win right now. This is the plus scenario where it maximizes D'Lo, it maximizes Karl Anthony Towns, and it maximizes Devin Vassell. A person that I think has self-creation upside. It may be a sliver, but there is something there. He is a 40% shooter. He is going to be able to defend medium to potentially plus size wings, depending on strength and conditioning.
He is a hyper competitor. He is a rotational savant. Like, the issue that they have on the wing is distinctly Devin Vassell shaped on defense. And then on offense, they just need shooters who are smart, and anything else is a bonus. And I think that, you know, obviously when you bet on 3 and D at a certain point, you're actually betting on jumbo initiators. And he is somebody who has shown the proclivity to create off the bounce for threes, and would have, his stats would reflect that more if they included long twos instead of just threes.
Yeah, I think that saying that their hole in the wing is distinctly Devin Vassell shaped is a perfect way to phrase it. I think that sort of our entire claim that the, like, one of the main ways to insulate Towns is by having an off-ball disruptor, that was written with Devin Vassell in mind. Like, that's who he is. He is a special off-ball disruptor. He is a guy who, on top of that, has the ground coverage that he can cover for Towns in multiple ways, right? Like Devin Vassell would have possessions where he'd be like at the nail, he would like stunt at the ball handler to stop him, and then there's like a pocket pass to the roll man, and Vassell is going to get there, and he's going to save Towns by blocking that at the rim, because he's that special in his instincts, in the way that he covers ground, in the way that he applies his length. He's just a special, special defender. And then, yeah, offensively, he just fits really easily, right? Like, he's going to shoot spot ups. I think he'll be able to hit some off move stuff. In the short term, we're definitely talking one dribble pull ups for sure. And then, yeah, long term, maybe some mild creation. I think that he has some abilities, a cutter as well, that would play well off Towns. It's perfect. It's a pretty perfect fit. Another guy that if they'd stayed in that like 4 to 7 range, that's probably what I would have been advocating for, but they're not going to take him at one. I wouldn't hate it either. I think that he certainly has a better chance to impact the game at that level than Denny does. And I think he should get much more serious consideration than Denny does, because kind of fits for similar reasons. But I think it's just a lot better.
Yeah, it's so good because, like, it makes so much sense for their short-term timeline. As, you know, we've made clear, fills that massive gaping team defense hole, and then, you know, is going to add some value on offense, you know, without taking up usage. But then he also, like, kind of is a long-term bet too, like with the shot creation and the noted potential for difficult shot making given the pull-up development this year. So it's kind of perfect for them timeline-wise as well, because, you know, let's short-term, if things work out, then great. He's probably a reason for it. If they don't long-term, then, well, you have a potential upside bet in Vassell to fall back on. And, I mean, I think that's part of why I'm so irresponsibly high on Vassell in general.
I don't think it's irresponsible to be ridiculously high on Devin Vassell.
I'm really high on him.
Yeah, but I think I think it's like kind of irresponsible not to be honest.
I won't say the number, but we like Devin Vassell a lot here.
What, so, you have him like 3 or something at this point?
Yeah, I have high, not 2, not 1.
Okay.
So yeah, I think that an important facet of Devin Vassell's pitch is also that, like, do you know what helps a somewhat struggling wing defender? Giving them another excellent wing defender. Like,
yeah,
Culver, as much as you would like to say that, like, or some people find that he wasn't what you expect on defense, like, he was also put in an extremely difficult situation.
Yeah.
And in a situation that changed midway through the year. Not only was he, like, given a probably outsized defensive assignment for a rookie, not only was he dealing with, like, the mental components of a shooting struggle and a shooting, you know, surgery, you also have, like, a defense that doesn't make any sense. And giving somebody who is, like just a detective on defense, capable of, you know, making rotations that you would point out in a film room of, like, if you were really, like, if you had the ability to stop time, you could probably make this rotation. Like, Devin Vassell makes that rotation really regularly. And because team defense is a component skill, adding another person like that is value added to Culver. It's also value added to Towns, because he's going to have less responsibility to communicate because you've added another good team defender. And, you know, it's easier to, if the team defense works, it's easier for D'Lo to goad people into mid-range jumpers.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. This fit makes so much sense in so many different ways that, like, if Minnesota doesn't do it in either a trade down form or
or a trade up from the second.
Yeah. 17. Yeah.
If that doesn't happen, it's because, at least to me, partially because Karl Anthony Towns picked somebody else. Yeah.
Please.
Because this just makes so much sense.
Please
in so
swap with the Knicks and take him at 7. Like,
yeah.
It would be so perfect.
8, yeah. Right? Knicks are 8.
I think they're 7, aren't they? Or are they 8?
I thought Detroit was 7.
Okay. 8.
Yeah, yeah.
8. Either way, he's going to be there, I think. I mean,
yeah, I think so he'll probably too. Yeah, unless Atlanta takes him.
Let's talk about some another guy who they probably won't take in.
Yeah, a guy who is far more realistic. He's far more realistic at 17.
Honestly. Well, I think he's very much in the play at 17, probably.
I think he's going to go before 17. Yeah, from what I have gained from speaking to people, I think that it's going to go before 17. That seems like a fair interpretation of how much people would like to move into like the back end of the lottery to take their own personal swings.
Yeah.
Can I make a pitch for him really high?
Yes. Sure.
In this imagining a world where they had like take him, you know, either first or fourth or fifth or whatever.
Sure.
Hey, so this Karl Anthony Towns thing isn't going to work. Like, you guys, almost no matter what you do, like, this is not going to work. He's going to want to go out. So you might as well get the biggest cut you can. Like, eventually you're going to have to deal D'Lo. Eventually you're going to have to deal Karl Anthony Towns. So why not take the highest ceiling in the draft? Why not take somebody who like could potentially really be something? In a way that maybe everybody else can't. Like, LaMelo is an archetype we've sort of seen before. Anthony Edwards is an archetype we've sort of seen before. Poku isn't. That might be terrifying. It probably isn't going to work, but it will certainly be something.
That sounds like a very, very good way to get fired.
Yeah, I don't really agree with that pitch. I mean, conceptually I get it. But it's just too much for me. Like, first of all, I'm probably less of a believer in Poku's ceiling than a lot of people. I think Max is probably the same way, if even lower than I am. I mean, with Towns, like, yeah. I mean, like, he gives you a lot of what you want. Like defensive playmaker, though he's, you know, play-to-play basis, he's not going to be what you want. But, you know, certainly the disruptor and the playmaker, you know, from a more splashy basis that you want next to Towns. And just offensively, having like two like 6'11" plus players with the movement shooting capabilities of Towns and Poku, obviously, you know, Poku not going to be anywhere near the shooter of Towns, but with certainly could have the volume, and that could be really devastating and then overwhelming for defenses to try to defend. There's obviously lots of holes with you know, Poku himself and that fit, but I think there are some interesting things that you could do, but I don't know. Like, number one is just...
The fit is fascinating. The fit is, like,
very almost... fascinating.
The fit is, yeah.
The fit is, defensively almost perfect. Because you have somebody that, like, is both a 4 and a 5 and could switch with, like, Cat on a... Like, Cat would do take the physicality aspect of the 5, but then wouldn't have to necessarily do the shot blocking or even, like, the rotational, like, because that's something that I feel like Cat struggles with, is just getting there to spots. That's Poku's legitimate speciality.
Yeah.
You have a blocks and steals maven who can shoot, who is also a offensive creator to reduce Cat's on ball time, giving him more opportunity to, he could run both Cat and D'Angelo off flare screens at the same time. In different sides of the floor from different angles. Like, there's so much that
Cat and Poku off flare screens at the same time.
Yeah, like, you have options to do like legitimately really fun things, and one is most likely too high. Like, to me, there's not really a number where I would be comfortable taking Poku, but I'm also a person who, like, if you see something special, you just do it. If, you know, if there's an option to do it at 8 or whatever, fine, if you have that kind of intel. But like, I would be pretty fine with taking a tremendous swing, just looking at Karl Anthony Towns and be like, hey, so you're here for 3 more years. I believe this kid by year 3 is going to be, you know, great. This is where we are.
Yeah, the reason I wouldn't take Poku at 1 is because I don't think that he has that creator ceiling. However, I do find this fit to be fascinating, and I kind of want them to do it because I want to see it. I want to see them try it.
That'll be fun.
I think he could return enough value for it to be approximating worthwhile if he really works out at number 1. So it's not the Denny situation where I don't think even totally optimized Denny's going to return that level of impact. I think Poku, especially in this fit, definitely could.
And yeah, I mean, it would just be, they'd be able to do things that we've never seen before. I mean, could you imagine like the off-ball game with Poku and Towns? Just like,
unbelievable.
What do you do? Like, what do you do with that? It would be bizarre and possibly like entirely unstoppable. I think that Poku, the rim protection from him with his ability to cover ground would be pretty perfect next to Towns. I think he brings less on sort of where Vassell really excels on the just like little stunts and stuff like that. I think that, you know, he's not the guy who's operating at the nail, shutting off all these drives, but what he brings as a playmaker at the rim is really special with the way he can cover ground. And I think that that is something that Towns, that would help Towns a ton in a different way, but still be very effective.
If you could walk out of this draft with Vassell and Poku, I would sell literally everything that's not nailed down. I don't think there's a combination of players that would produce a more synchronistic fit for this particular team. You would also need to get like D'Antoni here immediately. Just because, this is the world he always wanted, was, fours and fives who could, like, actually playmake. Not playmake for fours and fives, but, like, yeah, go run whatever you want.
Yeah, you would need a creative and daring mind steering the ship. But, I mean, that would be
fascinating.
That would be one of the, like, bolder team-making things that we've seen. And it had, like, the potential of it. Like, I'd be all the way back in on Minnesota long-term. They would have a chance to do something pretty special with that.
All right, so should we talk about your guys' thoughts on Killian Hayes here? Because I know all of us are very high on Hayes, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be realistically in play for the number one pick. But what are your thoughts on either of you? What are your thoughts on Hayes as a fit next to Russell and Towns here in Minnesota?
I can lead this one.
Go for it, PD.
So for me, Hayes with the other core two is it's maximizing Cat. It's going to maximize Killian, and it's not going to maximize D'Angelo. Because I think that like with D'Angelo's advantage creation and Killian's legitimate ability to do so, like he's going to be more on ball, and then comes the age-old question of how good of a shooter is D'Angelo Russell. Which like that's not necessarily the ideal role for him. And then like also if you're going to have Killian, you're going to run a lot of high pick and roll, and that's going to get pretty static. Then we're back to the same like wing concerns, and Culver's carrying a huge defensive burden where he may have to guard big wings. It's not a fit that I love. Like I understand it. Like I think Killian's a fantastic prospect, and think that like he has the ceiling for this pick, but the fit doesn't make a ton of sense, and it also doesn't seem to fit any of the boxes that the other ones do. It's like, this isn't a short-term play. It's not a long-term play. It doesn't make perfect sense across any route. Like, it's not the best circumstance for Cat. It's not the best circumstance for the draft pick. It's not the best circumstance for D'Angelo. And to me, this sort of just seems like a wait and see, and maybe they, either move D'Angelo around or switch around the chairs on the Titanic. It just doesn't invigorate me in the way that some of these other options did.
I feel like that's kind of the point of suggesting that it's like something that kind of could happen, that it's uninspired, but like understandable, I think. It's just not that risky, right? You're just sort of taking a wait and see approach with both him and D'Angelo. And it's very conventional. You're going to have like your traditional pick and roll ball handler between the two of them. I think that in the short term, you would just probably need to accelerate Killian's growth as an off-ball player in a way that's unreasonable to expect, even though I think in time we all think that he could get there to being a good one. But his value is always, of course, going to come as primarily an on-ball offensive player. I think defensively is what I like about this a lot, that he could take – I mean, but it's another situation where it's really not an optimization, because you probably don't want Killian taking the number one perimeter assignment on every other team. But I do think he's one of the better nail defenders in this class, and I think that he can really disrupt from that position on the floor. So I think it would be very helpful in that sense. But yeah, it's, I think that the it maximizes no one idea is kind of the main thing to focus on. I think if you told me like I had to pick one of my tier one guys to take at number one, which is Killian, LaMelo, and Ant, I think it would kind of by default be Killian, because I think it's just has the highest chance to be non-disastrous in the short term. And that's, you know, what you have to, that's you to salvage this whole situation. That's what you need. So if you kind of boxed me into that, I think I would go for Killian. But I don't know. How do you guys feel about that? The, like, if you sort of restricted yourself and you weren't allowed to choose from these more off the wall options, what would you do? So say it's between LaMelo and which is what I think it is in real life, and you can throw Killian in there. What would you guys do?
I would probably take Ant, because I think they're probably going to take Ant.
I'd probably take LaMelo, just because you have that's the guy I believe has the highest ceiling in like a post Cat world. That's who I'd want. I mean, with Killian, I echo a lot of what you guys say. I think it's just fine. Like I think a lot of it works. Like you said, like the nail defense is additive there. Certainly can, you know, the playmaking helps. But yeah, I mean, a guy who can't play really off ball in the short term, you'd like compounds a lot of your defensive problems. I mean, it's like Killian would certainly help them in a lot of ways, but like it's just like not super inspiring. And it lacks, like at least to me, lacks the upside of like a LaMelo pick. So I mean, yeah, I'd probably go with LaMelo, but like I wouldn't really bat an eye at Killian or Ant. I mean, I'd get the rationale behind all three of them.
Are there any other guys that you think could like maybe come into play, or do you think
we've there's no all? World where they ever take Wiseman, right?
I mean, no, I think I think that that's kind of,
God forbid, Obi.
There's no way. I mean, that seems more conceivable to me than Wiseman, but there's no way. Like, I don't think that Onyeka factors in, right?
No, I don't think so. I don't – Maxi obviously won't. Like, Cole I don't think will.
I mean, they wouldn't do Halliburton, right?
No way.
No, they're not creators for it.
No, like, I know we wouldn't do Halliburton.
Like, but no, I just think – I think that they're going to put him in, like, a one-on-one workout. He's going to get eaten alive. Like, that's just – like, a lot of – like – if you get considered for that number one pick, like you're going to do that workout and they're just going to be like, all right, beat, you know, whoever off the bounce, and it's going to be a problem. I just don't, I don't think that he's like to do that. He'd have to murder workouts or like have, you know, just like a ridiculous physical transformation. And I don't see that happening.
Yeah. So I think that's, I mean, that's kind of all we have on the Timberwolves guys. I mean, I don't think there's anybody else that we're really missing.
No, but I think we should definitively say if they stay at number one, who each of us would take.
Among realistic options?
No. If you were the Timberwolves lead decision maker, you had the number one overall pick. Okay. You can do with it as you please.
Can I do what I please with the rest of the roster? Like, can I trade D'Angelo?
No. D'Angelo Russell and Karl-Anthony Towns are there for as long as they want to be.
I can't.
You can't do that. I mean, I guess you could say like you're gonna trade Culver or something like that, because I think that's something that they could conceivably do. But whatever. So you're locked into Towns and D'Lo, but otherwise you could do as you please.
Assuming I'm locked into Towns, I'd probably say Vassell. Locked in D'Lo, I mean, I'd probably say Vassell. Yeah.
PD.
Vassell. I mean, they're gonna take Ant, but it's Vassell.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would take Okoro, but I think the case for Vassell is really strong as well.
Yeah, I'll say if I could move D'Lo, I'd take LaMelo, but I know I can't. So,
yeah, it would be between LaMelo and Killian for me if I could move D'Lo. That would be a tough decision. I think I would lean LaMelo in their case, but that would be a tough decision.
All right, so I guess that's all we have on the Wolves. Yeah. We have like PD has one catching eye guy. So PD, why don't you talk about your guy?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Mike Saunders from Cincinnati, 2020 high school class, played point guard at Wasatch Academy. Listed at 6 foot. I don't think he's 6 foot. One of the fastest guys in the NCAA next year.
I remember this guy.
Yeah.
He has the blonde
hair. Pure speed.
He is so fast. I remember
watching him after, what was it, Cam Pern wrote about him for the Steffi, and he's kind of wild. And I mean, he played against Cole Anthony too.
That team has all of the top prospects in Utah, right? They all go to that Wasatch.
Yeah. So like they had Maddie Sissoko, who's going to Michigan State.
They have
not from Utah, but like they have a Pop, who is from Vegas, but Richard Isaac's son.
Richard Isaac's. They have.
Yeah, they have Lohner and Sanders. They have a Saunders and a Sanders, both of whom are going to BYU. They play like a million miles an hour. All of the Iolani games are up on YouTube if anybody wants to watch. Developing shooter, really wonderful hard-nosed point guard and has like an absolutely elite skill. He quick finishes like guards, which is nuts. Like Division I guards can't stay in front of him enough that he can just like scoop finish out of it. 77% free throw shooter, like mid-30s or mid to high-30s for threes. I like the jumper long term, and he's just somebody that every time I watch him play, I'm excited to see more. Cincinnati is going to have him and Tari Eason along with all the returners from last year. They're building something at Cincinnati, and Saunders is somebody that I am incredibly excited to watch because he jumps off the screen.
Yeah, I remember watching him a little bit. I mean, his
crazy speed fast. Special. Like, it's really incredible. And then that's on a team with like big time recruits with some other like high major players, and he is fast.
He's also really like the way that Wasatch plays is very one more heavy. So like it's not uncommon to have like 4-1 mores in one possession. And so like I really like young guards that can penetrate, kick, and then relocate. And so you'll see a lot of threes where like he burns a guy, like just absolutely lights him on fire. Drives, gets to, like pinpoints it to the weak side. Then, you know, there'll be a one more, and then he'll relocate back and hit a three from the corner. And that sort of instinct bodes really well for me, especially as a guy who, like, struggled a little more as a shooter and is developing as his high school years go on. He's not going to be a one-and-done guy. But, like, if you have interest in Sharif Cooper, I would also recommend checking out Mike Saunders because they're sort of the same vein of these small guards who, like, are just blurs. And get shots off that no one expects them to. He's a little bit more like wired for the cause than Sharif is. Like Sharif has to do a lot more by himself. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just, you know, how you particularly like your point guard's wired. But he's a guy that I think is going to put up unexpectedly good numbers in Cincinnati as a freshman.
His shot kind of takes an eternity though, right? Like right now.
It's pretty slow. But he can get it off the dribble. He creates enough separation with his footwork on sidesteps and stuff. He's getting it off versus high level competition. The finishing is the issue when people go body to body, just because he's on the thin side. Yeah. But the floater is nice enough. It's an intriguing package for a guy who I just like think is going to play 12 years of professional basketball. And like whatever level that may be is going to be determined by how good of a shooter he is. But the indicators are there. The winning is there. The nose for angles and reads. It's a really fun package for a guy who like wasn't thought particularly highly of for reasons that are very far beyond me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what he turns into
as
my edit during his time at Cincy, which I'm sure will be multiple years. I mean, talk about having special traits. Most certainly does.
Mm-hmm. Max, do anybody?
No one comes to mind.
I'll quickly mention that Rocco Perkessine is the greatest prospect of all time, and we can end on that.
I did see our friend Jake Rosen posted him megging someone, and it was like it was megging someone from like far away too. It was pretty.
Yeah, it was like a third court meg. It's really fun. He's really
good. It was impressive.
It's always nice to see it. It's always great when you see a teenager just bull rush somebody out of the way and then just one arm shove them to the ground. There's that baseline clip from the most recent game. And just takes a grown man and with one arm and just sort of like pushes him into the dirt on the way to a layup. Yeah. That's inspiring.
I mean, the one that you always think of is like the one in the U16 title game versus Spain where he just like destroys Garuba with like a one-handed poster. yeah. Max, your homework for the weekend or whenever is to watch Rocco and then put him top five.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what my schedule for the weekend is. I'm gonna try to watch some Sharif. I need to decide if I'm in or out on Sharif.
You're probably gonna be out.
That's gonna be.
I don't know. I've gone back. What, PD?
I said Sharif is going to be one of the great like week to week updates starting the season, because like when he shoots, it's just like, this all makes so much sense. He has ridiculous finishing. He hangs in the air for like ever.
He's such an unbelievable finisher.
He has the greatest body control like ever.
Yeah. Like he lives at the rim, and like, he's like 5'10" and he's like an unbelievable finisher.
The footwork is uncannily good, and
It's too good. He's fearless. I mean,
PD, if Sharif shoots 40% on 6 3-point attempts per game at Auburn, what number pick will he be next year?
Oh my God. It's just flat 40. It's not higher than that. Like, we're talking like the 40 includes like some, like a whole bunch of self created stuff.
Oh, yeah. Six attempts a game, and it's Sharif. Yeah, they're gonna be tough shots.
He's going in the lottery.
He's higher than just the lottery.
Honestly, at that point, I mean, you can make a case for it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like top 12.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how these other guys turn out. I think he would go very high. That's I feel like that's kind of the case for Sharif, because like, I mean, there's a chance that he's that kind of like offensive engine. He's some aspects of his game are very impressive.
It's very hard to watch him at times and not think of Chris Paul. Like it's one of those things that when you watch him move, you're just like, there's a lot of Chris Paul here, and I'm like a little bit uncomfortable. Like, because you think it's just not a dispersion you want to cast on an undersized guy.
He's ridiculous. I mean, but in so many ways, but also just, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what, like, he's very interesting to me in that, like, when I first saw him, was not a fan, like, didn't think that the shooting was there at that level, and, you know, what if that's not there, the whole thing kind of falls apart, even though he does have special finishing, and he's a pretty ridiculous passer, but, like, it kind of falls apart if the shooting's not there. But I've become more open to him, and if all of those things are there at a consistent level, at the level that he flashes, you could be looking at a pretty special offensive player. And I just find him to be interesting among a strong class of guys that are kind of not like that, where they're all just like 6'9" freaks. They're all just like 6'9" geniuses. And then you have this little 5'11" guy, but maybe he's just amazing.
I'm really excited to watch him at Auburn. Really excited.
Yeah, so am I.
All right. Anything else we have?
No, I don't think so.
No. All right. We're going to wrap it up there. Thank you again to PD for coming on. Follow him on Twitter at AboveTheBreak3. Read all of his work. If you are a listener of this podcast and not a reader of his work, I don't know what you're doing. Is there anything that you want to plug or say, PD?
Yeah. If you could spend a little bit of time reading The Heuristic Part 3, which focuses on Cole Anthony, Tyrell Terry, and Trey Jones. I'm here to hype up Trey Jones in a way that other people have seemingly failed.
All right, so read that for that perspective. As always, you can follow the pod at Prep2ProPod. We'll have plenty of fun content coming with, you know, actual. It seems we have very quickly gone from fishing for content to now the draft is in 7 weeks and college basketball is a week after. So that'll be fun for all of you. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben_Pfeiffer_. You can follow Max at Max A. Carlin. And with that, I think we're good to end. Yeah. All right. We'll see you all next week.